When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome into First Take. I'm Victoria Arlen alongside Emily Kaplan, Damian Woody, and Chris Canty is joining us from afar. And there is never a dull moment here. And with the excitement of the NFL in full swing, with preseason kicking off, there continues to be a cloud looming. That cloud is, of course, the ongoing Deshaun Watson case. As of now, he will be taking the field to play in their preseason opener on Friday. The Browns announced shortly before heading to Jacksonville that Watson will be starting against the Jags on Friday. And this is a controversial move given that the NFL is currently appealing his six-game suspension served by disciplinary officer Sue L. Robinson after he violated the personal conduct policy. The NFL is pushing for a year-long suspension. So, Damian, I'm going to start with you. Should the Browns be letting Watson play?
No, I don't think it makes much sense to me because considering where Deshaun Watson, first of all, he's facing a six-game suspension. Yep. NFL is appealing that. It's not going to be any less. At minimum, it's going to be six. It's probably going to be extended out much further on top of the six games. And when I look at the Cleveland Browns right now, it's so important for the other quarterbacks to be able to get their their rep. Jacoby Brissett obviously is going to be the starting quarterback because Deshaun Watson is going to be suspended. But also this, and Chris, you know this as well, you're one hit away. You're literally one hit away from the next guy being up. So if you're the Cleveland Browns right now, I know Deshaun Watson is kind of the quote unquote shiny new toy, the guy that you signed a $230 million guaranteed contract to. But he's not going to be available for you. You got to get these other guys ready. Jacoby Brissett, but the other backup quarterbacks, because injury could be right around the corner. So for me, it just doesn't make much sense for the Cleveland Browns.
It doesn't make sense. What about you, Emily?
Absolutely. I feel like the Browns are living in denial because
they're living
in their own world right now because of this contract that they gave him with all these $1 million of guarantees. Because they live in this bubble in Ohio where Deshaun Watson gets on the field at training camp.
As if nothing's
the fans
wrong.
Are cheering for him and asking him for autographs. And as you said, the minimum, he's missing six games because his own union didn't appeal. So why are they taking Jacoby Brissett for granted? In my opinion, like, he's been thrown in the mix before, right? He was thrust into the situation when Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt, when Brady was serving his suspension. He was thrust into an Indianapolis. He was thrust into Dolphins. And he performed the best of his abilities every time. But if you want the best out of this guy, treat him with the respect that he deserves and let him be your quarterback one through camp because he's going to be your starter through these first six games.
Stop pretending that nothing's wrong. What about you, Chris?
You guys are making some salient points. Unfortunately, you're wrong because Jacoby Brissett, Josh Dobbs, and anybody else that the Cleveland Browns have in that room that's not named Deshaun Watson is irrelevant to the conversation. Deshaun is the future of the Cleveland Browns. And if you don't believe me, look at the guaranteed contract that they gave him. Also, look at the draft capital that they forked over to the Houston Texans for him. So the priority should be doing what's in Deshaun Watson's best interest because that ultimately will end up benefiting the organization in the long term. This is about making sure that you get Deshaun Watson all the reps that you possibly can in the practices and in the preseason games. You want to knock off as much rust as you possibly can from that year-long layoff. And here's the thing. With the looming indefinite suspension that Peter Harvey, the designee by Roger Goodell, is eventually going to hand down, you're talking about Deshaun Watson being off the field for another year. So for me, it's about making sure that you try to build back as much muscle memory as you possibly can in this training camp, in this preseason, so that when he's off the field indefinitely, you're talking about him returning and not having as much of a learning curve in terms of the length of time that it takes for him to get back to Deshaun Watson being one of the elite quarterbacks in the National Football League.
Chris, I think, here's the problem I have with your argument. You mentioned the word future.
Yeah.
This Cleveland Browns roster, they're built to win now. This is not some rebuilding Cleveland Browns team. So as much as, listen, I understand the contract. It's $230 million guarantee. I get all of that. But this Cleveland Browns roster is built to win right now. And so if you're giving away reps, valuable reps, okay, away to Deshaun Watson and rather getting Jacoby Brissett and Joshua Dobbs and all these other quarterbacks ready, I think you're doing a disservice not only to the whole team as a whole, the offense as a whole, because you're not going to have your guy available. He could possibly miss another full season, mm-hmm. and you're wasting reps in the preseason over a guy that you might not have. So get the other guys ready.
Here's the thing that I have an issue with what you're saying. If Deshaun Watson is not your quarterback and it's going to be Jacoby Brissett or Josh Dobbs, you're talking about a roster that's ready to win what? Like, you're saying they're ready to win now. What are they ready to win without Deshaun Watson as their quarterback? They're not going to win anything. Like, unless they go out and make a trade and bring in somebody else, like a Jimmy Garoppolo, this team is not getting past the Baltimore Ravens and the Cincinnati Bengals in their division. They're not better than the Buffalo Bills. They're not better than any of the teams in the AFC West. They're not better than the Indianapolis Colts. So what exactly are the Cleveland Browns winning with Jacoby Brissett or Josh Dobbs as their starting quarterback this year for all 17 games? It ain't going to happen. So, again, I get back to Deshaun Watson being the priority for this franchise. And if by some miracle you're talking about the suspension being upheld to 6 games, well, the reps that he's getting right now in preseason are going to benefit this team in this year. But ultimately, we're talking about what's in Deshaun Watson's best long-term interest. Listen, D. Wood, it wasn't that long ago when we saw a Pro Bowl-level quarterback in Michael Vick spend 2 years off the football field because he was locked up in jail. And it took him a full calendar year before he was able to get back to being a Pro Bowl level performer. If you're Cleveland, the goal should be, if he is going to be suspended indefinitely for 2022, to try to reduce the amount of time that Deshaun Watson needs coming back from that suspension in order to look like Deshaun Watson. And for me, that's getting as many reps as he possibly can in the preseason. That means preseason practices and preseason games.
Chris, what you're basically saying is that they should write off the season right now because he's not available. And, like, if I'm a player in that locker room and I'm getting that message from my coaching staff, you've been there, Dame. Have you ever had a coach before the season's like, nah, if we don't have our quarterback, we're not going to be good? They have a real chance to be good this year. They have elite running back. They have other things. And I wouldn't sleep on Jacoby Brissett. I actually think he's just as good, if not better, as an option as Jimmy Garoppolo. But give him a chance. Give him the rep. And, again, treat him with the respect that
he hadn't played a full season.
Because he's never been given the opportunity to.
He hasn't played a full season in the NFL.
Given the opportunity to.
Okay, guys.
I mean,
he had an opportunity in Indy. He had an opportunity in Indy. He didn't play a full season.
Well, look, there's always the time to be able to step up. We can't put that away from him. Watson did miss all of last season. He was a healthy scratch for the regular season in 2021. But look, Chris, we talked about should the Browns allow Watson to play, but should the NFL allow Watson to take the field? Not the Browns, the NFL.
No, I don't think the NFL should allow him to play in the preseason game if they're adamant about establishing this new precedent. And here's the thing. I'm not going to let Roger Goodell hide behind his designee and Peter Harvey in terms of the overall timeline. If you don't want Deshaun Watson to play this year, it is within your purview, it is within your power to take him off the field right now. You don't have to take this up to the 11th hour and issue a ruling, you know, sometime tomorrow afternoon before the preseason game. You can do it now and send a decisive message that we are not going to stand for violence toward women. And I'm including, when I say violence toward women, predatory behavior and stripping women of their agency. We're not going to be about that in the National Football League. We are going to have a new standard when it comes to the personal conduct policy around those women's rights issues. And Roger Goodell absolutely should step in and keep Deshaun Watson off the field to send a firm, unmistakable message that the National Football League will no longer condone this type of behavior from its players or from any members of the NFL, employees, front office personnel, and owners.
I agree with you, Chris. Yeah, Damian.
No, I absolutely agree with what Chris was talking about because, listen,
well said.
You know, it's not, we know that Roger Goodell is, you know, basically pawning it off on someone else as far as the appeals process. But this is, to me, this goes back to Roger Goodell's legacy. Okay, we've talked about other cases in the past as it relates to domestic violence against women, but Roger Goodell has a chance to kind of reset the narrative as it relates to his legacy in the National Football League. So if he wants to get that jump started right now, now's the time to do it. Don't let Deshaun Watson get on the field, whether it's, I don't care if it's preseason, regular season, you have an opportunity to set a new standard for the National Football League, and you can do that before he steps foot on the field for this week one preseason game.
Yeah.
I don't think the NFL should allow him to play, but I also don't think that they have a choice here because this is the bed that they made. Like, in the NFL's ideal situation, Deshaun Watson just disappears for a year and the public outrage dies down and we feel like justice is served and we forgive and forget. But the truth is, this man is front and center right now, a man who's been credibly accused of 24 cases of sexual misconduct.
Yeah.
And that's because they still cannot figure out a consistent or rational policy for disciplining players. And that's on Roger Goodell because he created this, right?
Created this, yeah.
In 2014 with Ray Rice, he was under siege and the public didn't love it. And then other cases came when he was a jury and judge and executioner. And Roger said, wait a minute. I don't want to be the face of this. I want to deflect responsibility. So he got the union to agree to this new process that has all of these middle steps. All of these middle steps are just bureaucracy and a sham because at the end of the day, Roger Goodell still has final say. But because they just agreed to this new policy, he kind of has to see it through. And therefore, they have no choice. This is the bet they made, and he's probably going to play this preseason game.
Well, I want to add on what Damian said before I let you go, Chris, is it is the legacy, but it is a fact where we have women. We've talked about this before. We have women getting in bigger places of power within the NFL. Women are athletes and sports fans and football fans. And this is the legacy of saying, no, we are not allowing, you know, for Goodell to create this process essentially to, and then now kind of step back on that, it is sending a firmer message too of like, wait a second, this is not good enough, but it does create a little bit murky waters of, well, this is the process you set, but this is also too, what you said about the legacy is, well, are we going to allow just, is six games enough? No, it's not enough. It is absolutely not enough, but it is a situation where we are in the middle of this kind of push-pull of what, who is going to step in and step out. And I think Goodell had kind of set that message too, where we are trying to get women and where we still have so much further to go as women in sports and beyond, that this is just creating a bigger conversation. And I personally don't think the NFL should allow him to play. I mean, I'm not a commissioner. I didn't play football, but I am a woman and I am someone who can sit at this and be like, wait, this is not okay. And what kind of legacy are you going to allow that this is a good enough punishment for someone who has been accused of over, you know, 24 cases of sexual assault? So it's unacceptable. And I frankly am on my soapbox a little bit, but it's a situation. It is a legacy, but it also is a place where women's rights and women in general are still fighting to be seen as equal and seen and heard. And this is a clear cut place of, well, are we going to be seen and heard?
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Shopping for Mother's Day is always a challenge because you wait until the last minute. But Macy's Gift Finder makes it incredibly fast and easy to find the right gift just in time for Mother's Day, whether you're shopping for your sister's first Mother's Day or your fashionista mom who loves to make a statement. Macy's Gift Finder has so many great gift ideas that you can easily pick out something special to celebrate them both. You can shop by price, anywhere from $25 and under to $100 and under. You can also sort by categories like fragrance, handbags, and more. Or gift lists, like for the mom who has everything. Pre-wrapped gifts or gifts for grandma. Find top brands like Studio Pro Model Beats headphones, Polaroid cameras, Samsung smart TVs. So what are you waiting for? Mother's Day is May 12th, and it'll be here before you know it. Macy's has the perfect gift guide to make picking something for mom easy this year. Head to Macy's.com/giftfinder today. That's Macy's.com/giftfinder. Thanks so much for listening to the pod and have a fabulous day. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Welcome back to First Take. It is time for a quick take. The GOAT Serena Williams, who announced this week in Vogue that she is approaching the end of her tennis career, had an early exit at the National Bank Open on Wednesday night with a 6-2, 6-4 loss to Belinda Bencic. Emily, what kind of atmosphere do you expect for Serena and the U.S. Open?
This is going to be electric. This is her signature event, and in New York, the crowd is a character of its own. They're going to shower her with appreciation. Now, we shouldn't have expectations for how she's going to perform. Lately, she's not on the top of her game. She's been hampered by injuries. But by announcing her transition away from the game, her conscious uncoupling, if you will, gives us a chance to celebrate her legacy. And that legacy is to show women how to show up authentically with power. It's been a role model for the Black community. She's changed the sport forever. So even if she gets eliminated in the first round, straight sets, she is still the GOAT.
She has already solidified her GOAT status. Now, moving on to another GOAT, we got Tom Brady, all right? Tua and the Dolphins practice with Tom Brady's Buccaneers on Wednesday and the first of two joint practices before the team's preseason opener Saturday. The timing, though, of their joint practice coincidentally comes 1 week after the NFL disciplined Miami for impermissible contact with Brady in 2019 and 2021. Failed efforts to persuade him to join the Dolphins as a limited partner, football executive, and possibly as a player. Here's Tua on his interaction with the GOAT.
I was able to talk to Tom. We were talking on the side for a good bit. He was just asking how the offseason was. We were talking a little about golf at the same time. But for the most part, 23 years playing, I mean, that's a long time. That's a lot of knowledge. So I was asking him some things, and he gave me some good insight on. So I'm going to keep that between me and Tom. Then if you guys want to ask Tom, you guys go ask him.
I love how he just bounced it off to you. If you want to go talk to Tom, go talk to Tom, you know. All right, Chris, will Tua be the Dolphins' long-term starter, though? That's the real question we want to answer here.
Hell no. He's not going to be the Dolphins' long-term starter. And guys,
this is why we started with you.
If you got to keep asking the question, eventually you're going to land on the answer being no. If I thought Tua had the potential to develop into a top 10 to 12 quarterback in the NFL, then I would say, yeah, the Dolphins are going to continue to ride with him. But right now, guys, I got him as the 10th ranked quarterback in the AFC at best.
Whoa.
At best.
Ouch.
And Dolphins fans, don't at me in my social media. Don't get at me like that, because I'm telling the truth. A hit dog will holler, and here are the receipts. Number one, you can't rely on Tua to be healthy. He's only played in 23 of the 33 possible games since he was drafted a couple of years ago. The second thing, over this two-year span he's been in the NFL, he's got the 24th ranked QBR among quarterbacks that are eligible. And that's right in front of Daniel Jones from the New York Giants. How's that working out for Big Blue? And then the last part about this is, when it comes to Tua being able to give your offense that versatility, being able to push the ball down the field, the guy falls short. In his 2 years in the league, he's 29th in completions of 20-plus yards downfield. He's had 45 of those such completions, and he's only had 3 touchdowns in such throws. In comparison, you got Justin Herbert from the LA Chargers. You know, the guy that Chris Greer passed on to take Tua. He's thrown 104 such completions, 20-plus yards downfield. And you're talking about that dude having 22 touchdowns of 20-plus yards or more. Guys, the evidence is there. Tua ain't that dude. The Dolphins have tried to do a great job of building the supporting cast around him, but they're going to find out a definitive answer this year that Tua is not going to be their long-term quarterback.
All right, Emily, I have to start with you because you've just been smug mugging it over here.
I have. All I have to say, Chris, is hell yes, he can be, because you're only looking at the last 2 years. I like to look at a larger body of work, a larger sample size. And ever since Tua was in high school and throughout college, all anyone's ever said, you hear it from scouts, you hear it from opposing coaches, his accuracy is special. You talk about his touch on the ball. That's a constant. That's something that never changes. What does change is your circumstance. And when he came into the NFL, he did not have a good circumstance.
Yeah.
He was not on a very good team with a lot of weapons, unlike, I don't know, Justin Herbert, who had a very good supporting cast around him. He never had any open targets in Miami. Meanwhile, he also had this hip injury, which a lot of people thought could be career-threatening. He's healthy now. He has an elite left tackle they just signed. He has a super, super elite wide receiver. You're about to see, with that accuracy and that health and better circumstance, that this guy can be the starting answer and starting long term. And all I have to say is hell yes.
I want Tua to be that guy. I really do. I want Tua to be that guy because I really like Tua. But Emily, I'm so concerned about, you know, one thing in sports we always talk about, the very first thing is your best ability, is your availability.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing with Tua. And I know he's a year further removed from the hip injury, but I still have a big question mark.
We had the rib injury last year, too.
Correct.
Yep.
And I think more so, Tua's accurate, but more so than that, for me, in the National Football League, it's hard to go on 10, 12, 13 play drives. It's just hard because defenses are that good. You got to have big, explosive plays. Mm. Miami has basically like a 4x1 track team on the outside. But do they got the guy to get it to them, to get it to him? The evidence so far in his career is no. Yeah. He hasn't been able to create a lot of explosive plays in the passing game. Now, I know the offense is a little different because they're going to expect these wide receivers run after catch. That's a staple of this West Coast offense. But I just don't see with Tua his ability to create explosive plays in the passing game. Maybe that will change with Tyreek Hill in the mix. But so far, the evidence tells me he has not been able to do it thus far.
Well, Tyreek Hill had over 1,200 receiving yards last season, which was the seventh best in the league. So who knows? Maybe he's not too good to be true, but we got to take it to a break.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. When you're on a business trip, you know what goes completely off the rails? Your workout routine. Especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups, sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or you just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up, power your buys, your tries the right way, or de-stress with a little cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Dallas will begin joint practices today with the Broncos. The Cowboys and Broncos will face off in their preseason opener this weekend, and all Dallas starters are expected to be there. However, they will not be playing Saturday. So with the theme of starters, Emily, who is the most important player on the Cowboys that is not named Dak?
Firstly, I just want to say, this is a rite of passage in my ESPN career. I'm on First Take talking about the Cowboys, but I become a woman. The answer here is CeeDee Lamb. Just think about what this kid has done in his first 2 years. As a rookie, he nearly hit 1,000 yards. Next year, he hits 1,100. That's without being the primary target. Now, this year, if you're talking about the most indispensable guy, Michael Gallup's coming back from an ACL. You don't know what you're going to get. James Washington is out 6 to 10 weeks. So if you miss CeeDee Lamb, there's not a guy on this roster that can do what he does. And then you can't justify trading away Amari Cooper. You can't justify Dak Prescott's extension. You can't justify missing the playoffs in this very weak division, which is quite frankly a joke. So he is the most indispensable and important player on this team, not named Dak Prescott.
All right, Chris, what about you?
You know where Chris going.
Yeah, I can't get
you. CeeDee Lamb needs
CeeDee Lamb needs the quarterback to be able to do his job. I'm going to go with Micah Parsons because not only is Micah Parsons the best player on the Dallas Cowboys, he might just be the best defensive player in all of football. And no, I'm not forgetting about Aaron Donald. That's how good Micah Parsons is. You're talking about him finishing second in defensive player of the year voting as a rookie. 84 tackles, 13 sacks, and probably the most impressive stat that I saw, 30 quarterback hits. And we're talking about this guy being an off-the-ball linebacker, being an edge rusher, lining up over slot receivers and sub packages. there's nothing on defense that Micah Parsons can't do. And so when you think about the identity of what this Dallas Cowboys team is going to have to be moving forward, it's not going to be on the offensive side of the ball. It has to be on the defensive side of the ball. You know, the unit that was top 10 in scoring and the unit that was number one in takeaways, the reason why they were able to generate so many turnovers was because of Micah Parsons wreaking havoc and creating so much pressure on opposing quarterbacks. You look at the offensive side of the ball for the Cowboys, it's going to be tough sledding. Because you lost Connor Williams, you had to cut Lyle Collins as a cap casualty, you lost Amari Cooper, you lost Cedric Wilson. I get the importance of CeeDee Lamb because it seems like he's the only guy that can dictate front and coverage on that unit. But if you took Micah Parsons away from that defense, think about what that unit becomes then. Right now, you're talking about that being a championship caliber defense. Without Micah Parsons, that's just an average defense at best.
Hell, you take CeeDee Lamb away from that offense. What the hell is the Dallas Cowboys offense? I mean, listen here. You're talking about an offense that traded away Amari Cooper. Cedric Wilson left him via free agency, okay? Michael Gallup is coming back off the ACL. James Washington is going to be out for an extended period of time with that foot injury. The only other receiver that's caught a pass from Dak Prescott is Noah Brown, okay? That's all they have at the wide receiver position. So, yes, I love Michael Parsons. Michael Parsons is one of the most exciting, dominant players that we have in this league. But you take CeeDee Lamb away from this offense, where does that put Dak Prescott? Where does that put this Dallas Cowboys offense?
That puts Dak Prescott in a position.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Chris.
That puts Dak Prescott in a position.
Hold on,
B-Wood. I got you. You asked what position does that put Dak Prescott in? Mm-hmm. It puts him in position to earn that $40 million a year that Jerry paid him a couple of years ago. You pay quarterbacks that kind of money because they're supposed to be force multipliers. They're supposed to elevate the play of everybody around them. I don't want to hear about an inexperienced receiving core. I don't want to hear about an offensive line that's struggling when it comes to Dak Prescott's production and his ability to make that offense go. CeeDee Lamb having other weapons makes it a lot easier. But if you took CeeDee Lamb off of that offense, I still think you're talking about the pressure being on Dak Prescott to make that thing go. If you took Micah Parsons off of that defense, essentially what you're doing is removing one of the best players in the National Football League off of that. I mean, in terms of the impact that players on the Cowboys roster have towards their success, you're talking about Dak being number one because of the nature of the position that he plays, and then Micah Parsons.
Do you want to jump in on this, Emily?
ESPN card by being able to debate the Dallas Cowboys on this show. I'm taking away my Penn State card because I'm a Penn State alumnus and I love Micah Parsons and he's a beauty and I want to believe in you, Chris. However, I'm so with Damian here because what is this Dallas Cowboys offense without those two guys? Because Zeke Elliott is just not what he is. He's totally burned out. He's trending towards wash territory. I can never look into Damian Woody's eyes and know exactly what he's thinking, but I think he's agreeing with me here.
Sipping the tea.
Is going to be the only reason that they can win in this division, that they potentially could win a playoff game. And again, if he's gone, they've got nobody. If Micah Parsons is gone, maybe the defense isn't as good, but it can be a next man up mentality.
Look, I think Micah's great. CeeDee's great. It's the Dak show, but obviously
he's the best player on the team.
Yes, he is. I mean, he is.
On the team.
His stats do not lie. I agree with you, Chris. I agree with you.
CeeDee can be the best player on the team. We just haven't seen him in the number one role.
But you know what? The curtain's coming up. We shall see. They have their preseason opener this weekend. Now, this is also the third time they've ever had joint practices. So we will see.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, The majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's electricebikes.com.
We've got another quick take. Aaron Judge continues to crush baseball, hitting his 45th home run of the season, but his team is struggling, to say the least. They have lost 8 of their last 10 games after having one of the hottest starts to the season in recent history. Chris, should the Yankees be concerned?
We absolutely should be concerned because right now we're tied with the Houston Astros for the best record in the American League, and we've given up home field advantage. I mean, if you look at the Yankees postseason record when it comes to facing off against the Astros, the ALCS in 2017, the CS in 2019, both of those were games, were series where the Yankees fell short, and they fell short in Minute Maid Park. So you have to be worried about it. The pitching staff is a huge concern, and that's the biggest difference in what we've seen from the Yankees post All-Star break as opposed to what we saw at the beginning of the season.
And as a Red Sox fan, I'm not super mad about that. Now, we have to move on to another really good athlete. Ja'Marr Chase's rookie year was pretty good, I'd say so. His 1,455 receiving yards were the most ever for a rookie in the Super Bowl era. And, oh, yeah, he helped lead the Bengals to their first Super Bowl appearance since 1988. Not too bad for the LSU product. So after making a case for himself being one of the top wideouts in the league, Chase went on the I Am Athlete podcast to give his list of top receivers in the game right now. And his top dog was Devontae Adams, who has an NFL-high 29 TD catches over the last two seasons. Chase has last year's Triple Crown winner Cooper Kupp as number four, and former LSU teammate Justin Jefferson rounding out his top five. Now, Damian, who will be the top wide receiver in the NFL this season?
My man already told you. You saw the list.
I want to ask you. That's his list.
It's Devontae Adams. Nothing's changed. He's still the best route runner in the National Football League. He's just relocated from Green Bay, where the cheese is, to Las Vegas, okay? You got Josh McDaniels, one of the brightest offensive minds in the National Football League, and Derek Carr. Is Derek Carr Aaron Rodgers? No, he's not. But he's no scrub, okay? Derek Carr is a really good quarterback. Mm-hmm. And I think this situation will actually help Devontae Adams because they have more weapons around Devontae Adams. You're talking about Darren Waller, the tight end, matchup nightmare. Hunter Renfrow, matchup nightmare. So you know who's going to be getting probably more one-on-one coverage that he's seen in a long time? Devontae Adams. Again, I'm going to say the best route runner in the National Football League, period.
All right, what about you, Chris?
I don't hate Devontae Adams, Woody, but I'm going to go with my guy, Ja'Marr Chase, the one that put together the list that inspired us to talk about it. Because you're talking about this dude being fourth in receiving yards last year, being third in yards after catch per reception, and also you're talking about him being third in touchdowns. He's an absolute beast. The guy is the most explosive receiver in the National Football League. And if you don't believe me, just look at the receipts. No receiver had more 50-plus yard catches than Ja'Marr Chase last year. He had 6 of them. So, I mean, it just goes to show you how dominant this guy is. And we're talking about him doing all of this in his rookie season. And the guy that was throwing him the ball last year happened to be the most sacked quarterback in the National Football League. So when you think about the upgrades that Cincy has made along the offensive line and what they're trying to do in terms of building that roster, it feels like this offense is only going to create more quality opportunities for Ja'Marr Chase to show out. So I got to go with Ja'Marr Chase as the guy that's going to have the best campaign of any receiver in 2022.
Well, Ja'Marr Chase was the only rookie to have multiple playoff games with at least 100 receiving yards. I agree with you, Chris. What about you, Emily?
I don't hate either of your choices. They're fine choices, but you're both wrong because the answer is who's going to be the best this year? And it's going to be the guy on the best offense in the NFL. That is Stephon Diggs, a guy who likes to thrive off some disrespect. I kind of like that about him. But what Stephon Diggs has is the best symbiotic relationship in the NFL. This is where I show off my Penn State education. I use a
word
like symbiotic.
I paid attention
in biology class. I didn't. I cheated my way through it. But he doesn't cheat at all with Josh Allen because he makes Josh Allen better. Josh Allen would not be the quarterback he is if he didn't have this elite option that he can always have this chemistry with. And I don't think Stephon Diggs is the receiver he is if he didn't have this relationship with Allen. I mean, look at the way that he elevated his game once he came over from Minnesota. There's nobody better in the league than these two when the play is broken. Stephon Diggs always finds himself open. He runs a great route. Maybe not quite as good of a route as Devontae Adams, but it's a very good route. He's very good on these contested balls. Again, this is going to be the best offense in the league, and Stephon Diggs, he's going to be the guy this year that is leading the league in touchdowns, receiving yards, all them wide receiver stats.
Steph Diggs. Josh Allen having a better relationship than Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow? Did we not see what those guys did at LSU? I'm just putting that out there. Just throwing it out there.
I think symbiotic as well.
I think that's symbiotic to take a break from that, shall we? All right. Thank you, Chris, for that symbiotic reference there in the Penn State, of course.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles in everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits, like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with a Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Now, hitting for a cycle is one thing, but hitting a home run cycle is on a whole another level. That's exactly what Cardinals prospect Chandler Redmond did yesterday for their AA affiliate, Springfield Cardinals. He hit a solo shot, a two-run homer, a three-run homer, and a grand slam. What Redmond did was an extremely, extremely rare feat. It is believed to be the second home run cycle in minor league baseball history after Tyrone Horn in 1998, who also achieved the feat for the Cardinals' AA affiliate. No player has ever accomplished this feat in MLB history. So that got us thinking, what is the greatest individual sports feat in a game? I'm going to start with you, Emily, because I believe it's hockey.
It is. I am the national hockey reporter at ESPN, and I feel like it is my obligation to bring some hockey talk to the show.
Let's go.
So let's go back to 1994. Yeah, you're laughing, but this is real. Dominik Hasek, 70-save performance. Woo! In a four-overtime game in the playoff against Marty Brodeur. And again, there might not be the many hockey people watching, or maybe you don't know, but Dame, you're a hockey guy.
Yep.
You love the Islanders, so I'm going to speak in terms that you might understand. Imagine you're going up against Lawrence Taylor mm-hmm. in a playoff game, and you guys are battling and battling all game, and the 70th time you have to go up against him, you block him perfectly, and your running back goes for a 100-yard touchdown. That's exactly what Hasek did in this game. It's absolutely insane. I don't know if we'll ever see it again.
What's yours, Damian?
Mine is Wilt.
Yep.
Scoring 100. I mean, 100 points in a game.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we've seen, you know, we've seen in the 60s, we've seen Kobe, what had like 81.
Yeah.
But Wilt Chamberlain scoring 100 points back in the day, that just blows my mind. Mm-hmm. So I'm going with Wilt.
What about you, Chris?
I'm going with Peyton Manning. He didn't score 100, but he scored half a 100. It was in 2013 where he tied the NFL passing touchdown record for a single game with 7 TD passes. Now, the reason why I remember it so vividly is because I was on the Baltimore Ravens. And, yeah, on that play right there to Julius Thomas, that's when I realized it was going to be one of those kind of days because I hit Peyton Manning pretty doggone hard, and the guy still threw a perfect ball to Julius Thomas for a touchdown. 462 yards, no interceptions, 7 touchdowns, an unbelievable performance. And to this day, I blame the Baltimore Orioles for that happening because that game should have been in Baltimore to open the regular season, not in Denver. So thank you, Baltimore Orioles, for having the Ravens on the wrong side of Peyton Manning history.
I mean, for me, it's going to be Bobby Orr flying through the air after his epic Game 4 overtime winning goal is, look, for the Boston Bruins, it was their first Stanley Cup in 30 years. It's an iconic sports moment, and I'm all about it. But, you know, we're talking Little League World Series. That's coming on right after us. And so before we get to that, let's talk about Brody Jackson from the Webb City, Missouri team says his dream job is to be a chicken nugget taste tester. So that's a job I think we all wish that we could have. And so let's share, though, our dream jobs we had as a kid. Let's start with you, Damian.
I lived mine out. Yeah. I wanted to be a professional football player.
Yes.
That's something I was a big fan of the then Washington Redskins and their, you know, watching Doug Williams and those early teams. And
yeah.
And so for me, I was able to play 12 years. So I was able to live out my dream. Yep.
All right, what about you, Chris?
I wish I could have made video games as a grown man. That was my thing. When I was a kid, I loved video games. My favorite on the Nintendo was Super Tecmo Bowl and Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. When I graduated to the Sega Genesis, it was about Sonic the Hedgehog. And then when I had the Super Nintendo, I had that Super Mario Kart. So I wish I could have made video games as a grown-up. But unfortunately, I had to settle for playing 11 years in the National Football League and winning the Super Bowl.
Oh, no big deal. No big deal. All right, so we've got multiple. I don't even know what to say to that. All right, Emily, what was your dream job?
No, these are so beautiful. I mean, Dan's almost made me tear up.
I had goosebumps.
Yeah. Obviously, that makes so much sense, and that's super cool. When I was a kid, I rode the bus. I rode the bus a lot because I had two working parents. My mom actually worked it out that I could ride the bus so long that it would drop her off at her elementary school where she was working because they got out later. And so I told my parents, I want to be a bus aide. And they said, well, Emily, don't you want to be a bus driver? And I said, nah, that's too much work. So that was me as a kid. Apparently, I developed a work ethic somewhere along the line. In fifth grade, I was saying I want to be a sports writer, and now they put me on TV to talk about sports. So
I'm just going to
Okay. I can still be a bus aide, though. I can still train.
You can still do it. I'm just going to throw it out there. I wanted to be a Christmas elf. I literally wanted to be a Christmas elf. This is literally, I had elf costumes. I wanted to be a Christmas elf, and that did not happen. So I now get to share with everyone on national television that I want to be a Christmas elf. So that is going. On that note, I don't even know how to, you had your moment, and I just wanted to be a Christmas elf, and I still do, kind of. But
are you exceptionally good at wrapping presents?
Yes. I think I just really wanted to work at the North Pole. I was so inspired by all the Christmas movies, and I feel like I'm just digging myself a hole now.
A little elf hole. You've got
a
this.
A little elf hole. I just
well,
love
Victoria,
the
Victoria.
Yeah. Yes.
Victoria, you can channel your inner Will Ferrell and be like Buddy the Elf and still be an elf in the North Pole. I'm just saying.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I might just wear elf shoes at some point here. But, you know, that's going to do it for us here on First Take on that note. Next up, we've got some Little League baseball action from the Midwest Regionals as Davenport, Iowa squares off with Fargo, North Dakota. First Take is back tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern. Live out your elf dreams, folks. Live it out. There it is.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.